Stop the blame game. Stop. Stop looking out the window and look in the mirror.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. In today's show, we're going to be previewing Thursday's two games in the NBA playoffs. That is Cleveland and Toronto and Boston and Philadelphia, two Eastern Conference games. So we're going to be talking about those two games for DFS purposes. So
let's get to it.
Let's get to it indeed. Just quickly before we do get into that, the Phoenix Suns are the first team to announce a new hire of their coach. Obviously, Memphis is going to be sticking with JB Bickerstaff, and I have my issues with that. But Phoenix have hired Utah Jazz assistant coach Igor Kokoskov, who's a Serbian, and he was the coach of this Slovenian national team, which featured both Goran Dragic and Luka Doncic, and won the European Championships recently. So he's a well-respected coach. Obviously, he's been an assistant coach at the college ranks. He's coaching Slovenia. He's well-liked in Utah as an assistant coach, and obviously very well-respected. And the Suns have made, I think, a really good choice. Obviously, we're never going to know at this point whether he's going to be successful. Plenty of assistants who are good assistants don't turn out to be good head coaches. He does have some of that international head coaching experience with Slovenia. But I like the process that Phoenix went through. They didn't just go with a big name, and maybe that's something to do with Sava's, tight arsishness, that he didn't want to fork out the cash. But Kokoskov has been highly regarded by many people around the league, and I think Phoenix has made a really good choice there. We will see how it all pans out with everything that he's got to work with now, how poor this team was, but they've obviously got a ton of assets coming in with a guaranteed top four pick this year, plus I think the 16th selection in the draft as well as another future pick coming from Milwaukee. So some assets coming here for Kokoskov. He's already got Joshie Jackson, Devin Booker there as well, other guys, TJ Warren, Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris, these other guys that he can try and mold in. And the other thing I think this does for Phoenix is it does help them if they do happen to select Luka Doncic. Now, of course, we don't know what their draft pick is going to be, but I think now with the hiring of Kokoskov, and there would have been some discussion in that as well, is if it comes to a spot where they're at pick one, or they're at pick two and Ayton goes pick one, or they're at pick three and Ayton and Bagley go pick one and two, and Doncic is available to them, that will make them lean towards Luka. I don't know that for sure. That's a speculation point on my part. And again, the hire of Kokoskov is not made because they know they're getting Doncic, because they have no idea that they're getting Doncic. But I think that what it will do is if they're presented with that opportunity at one or two or three or four, whichever it is, and Doncic is an option, I think it pushes it from being maybe a 50-50 or a 40-60 to being a 60-40 the other way, that Luka will go that way. And I really, really be interested to see Doncic playing alongside Jackson, playing alongside Booker, as the 1-2-3 combination. They'd be very, very intriguing to see. As you're all well aware, I think that Doncic should be the number one pick in this draft. That doesn't mean the majority of NBA teams think that way. I think they think actually the opposite, and that Ayton should be. But I think that this hire, it's also a landmark thing as well for the NBA. It's the first European head coach in NBA history. First European-born head coach in NBA history, so we'll see how that all goes. With this team, there's going to be numerous poor and bad takes about this hire throughout articles and Twitter, but most of that is not representative of what the NBA circles are thinking about the Kokoskov hire. So it is really good to see Igor get that position and what it means for Phoenix, who have been, put through the Earl Watson ringer, the Sava mess, the whatever bullshit's going on with Tyson Chandler, Eric Bledsoe, Jay Triano last season. This is a great step in the right direction, and now they've just got to hope that those lottery balls go their way to see exactly what they can bring out of it. The other thing that we've happened today is Jamal Crawford has opted out of his $4.5 million player option for next season. He'll be obviously looking for more of a longer term commitment somewhere. He apparently, the word is from Chris Haynes of ESPN that he'll be looking to go back to Minnesota. I don't think Jamal Crawford is a particularly useful player at this point. He has so many defensive deficiencies. He shoots. That doesn't necessarily mean they go in. And he has offensive deficiencies as well, just because of the way that he plays. So it'll be interesting to see where he ends up going or what this means. But he is opting out of his $4.5 million player option for next season. The other news we did have over the last couple of days is Wesley Matthews opted in, unsurprisingly, to his $19 million player option for next season. And we're going to get more of those player option opt-in, opt-out decisions coming over the next couple of weeks and months, of course. Now, what we'll do is we'll transition into Thursday's action. We will talk some DFS, and we'll start with game two of the Cleveland-Toronto series. Let's look back at game one. I thought that the Cavs would stick with their starting lineup from game... Well, that's not true. Let's refresh that. I thought that they would go to this starting lineup, and I thought it would cause problems for Jonas Valanciunas with Kevin Love starting at center. In fact, it was the opposite, and Jonas Valanciunas caused considerable problems for Kevin Love. And then, you know, halfway through that game, you think they're better off going big and putting Tristan Thompson out there. And he was pretty successful with a 14 and 12 double-double, while Love continued his struggles, 7 points on 13 shots. Ty Lue has come out now and said that he will stick with that same starting lineup for game two. So it'll be Kevin Love starting at center, LeBron at the four, and George Hill at point guard. But that doesn't mean that we're necessarily not going to get decent minutes out of Thompson, or a similar rotation to what we saw in game one, where Thompson played 26, Georgie Hill played 28, Larry Nance was out of the rotation, and Rocket Rodney Hood and Jordy Clarkson barely played. We had big minutes from Korver. J.R. Smith finally dropped in 20 points, and him and Korver combined for 10 triples in this game. And Jeff Green also had a nice game. He was pretty much invisible in that Pacers series, but he had 16 points and contributed defensively as well. But as often is the case with Jeff Green's good games, is they come when he shoots unsustainably well. Now, he had 16 points. He didn't miss a single field goal attempt, and he went 7 of 8 from the line. Those things are not replicable in any sort of stretch, unless you think a 106 true shooting percentage is a sustainable thing, which of course it obviously isn't. So I would imagine that rotation is very, very similar for Cleveland. For Toronto, I'm not exactly sure what we'd get here from Jonas Valanciunas. 3 games in a row in excess of 30 minutes. He played 34 in this one, had a massive 21 and 21 double-double, missed a ton of tip-ins, especially late. Only 37% field goal percentage in this game on 19 attempts, but he was an animal, and he played Kevin Love off the floor at times. Will that continue to be the case? Will they exploit Valanciunas? Casey does have quite a quick hook with Jonas, and that could be a concern here as to whether he plays those 30 minutes again. You know, I think Valanciunas is really good, and you know, I think he should be playing 30 minutes a night, but whether Casey believes that, that's still up in the air. We had big minutes from the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
As he was matched up against LeBron, 30 minutes for him, and Fred VanVleet hurt his shoulder again, it appeared. He's listed as probable, as is Serge Ibaka, who twisted his ankle coming down on LeBron on a 3-pointer attempt. VanVleet only 15 minutes, but still closed the game, missed that 3-pointer at the end. With VanVleet being a limited there, we still had 16 minutes for DeLon Wright, but it mainly gave more minutes to Valanciunas and fewer minutes to the Ibaka at center lineups, with our Siakam getting some minutes there as well, 22 of them. So I think the big decision there is, can VanVleet play more minutes with his shoulder, or do they stick with more Valanciunas at center, depending on how successful Kevin Love is? That could really be it. That's a big impact on what happens with Jonas. And that does make it something, I guess, a little bit tougher as to how that's all going to pan out with Jonas in terms of his floor or his stability, given how it could be impacted significantly by what Kevin Love does. Now, this is game two. As I said, the Cavs won that game in overtime after not leading at all through regulation. The Raptors should be pissed. Their fans should be pissed. I don't think they should be panicking and thinking, oh, same old Raptors, as many are saying, but they clearly should have won that game, had many opportunities. They need to get, if they don't win this game, then the series is toast, but they've got every chance, and I think they should get this one. They're 6.5 point favorites, and the total is 212.5 points. The only injury concerns are the Ibaka and VanVleet designations. They're both probable, so there's almost zero chance that they won't play. For the point guards in this one on FanDuel, Kyle Lowry is 8,200. He had another 36 in game one, and it was far from his best game. I'd be happy going back to Lowry here, especially with a paucity of other great point guard options. On this slate, you know, Terry Rozier's salary is up. Simmons' salary is pretty high. Georgie Hill, we don't know how his minutes are going to shake out. So it's not like there's great, great options on the slate. As good as Rozier was, as good as Simmons were, they are still priced fairly highly. So you've got three high-priced point guards that you can go for. As for Hill, he's at 3,800. So I still do like that as a tournament play because he could very easily give you 24 or 25 points. And that's a good return on that investment there. You've got Van Vliet at 3,800. You've got DeLon Wright at 4,800. I'm not really feeling super good on either of those guys. I could throw Freddles in as a GPP guy, but I'd rather George Hill for that similar salary, especially with Fred still dealing with that shoulder soreness. DeRozan's at 8,700, and he had a good game one, 48 points in that one. I still think that might be just a little bit too high for DeMar, but he is going to have to provide a ton of offense for this team, and he did it in game one, but still probably could have done more. So he's not a horrendous pick at all, but it's all about can you fit him into your lineup. While Kyle Korver at 4,200 hit 5 threes, but still only gave you 23 FanDuel points, which is basically right on where you need to be at that 4,200, and that takes a little bit of the interest away from him. The plumber, J.R. Smith, he's up to 4,500, and he had 31 FanDuel points in that game one. I still would only be looking at him as a tournament guy. We know that he's been hit or miss, basically miss every game, and occasionally has these big games, but his big games do have more or higher potential than what Korver's big games do. Hood and Clarkson, I just can't see it. They're just not playing enough, and Clarkson looks horrible. For the small forwards, LeBron James.
LeBron James.
He's at 13,500, and while we feel like LeBron can get that value, he's going to get 60, it feels like, almost every game, and he had 67 in game one. Can you fit the right amount of guys around him? Because if you can, sure, it's a perfect cash play. His floor is as solid as anyone else's, but you need to get those other guys around him. So he's someone to clearly look at and go, where else can I get these guys? But he's not a guy where you say he has to be in every one of my lineups, because it could really, really torpedo you in a cash lineup. If your cash lineup involves you putting Jordan Clarkson in because you kind of fit someone else in, then you might end up being in a little bit of trouble just because of that. The Jedi, OG Anunoby, 3,500. He's going to be playing a ton of defense. He's not going to be doing a huge amount offensively, so I'm not sure that he's really a high upside guy or a high floor guy. CJ Miles is someone I'd prefer at that $3,500 price point in a tournament. For the power forwards, you've got Love at 6,500 and Serge Ibaka at 4,600. Both of these guys have been incredibly disappointing. Ibaka had 13 points in game one. Love had 24 points in game one, well behind where they need to be. If I'm going to pick one of them, it's probably going to be Love, but I have no faith in what he's doing at the moment, and that would only be a tournament guy. Siakam's at 38, and I don't really see much there. Well, Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He is at 4,000. I'd feel more comfortable throwing Jeff Green in at 4,000, even in cash, and especially in tournaments than those other guys. But he can be quite hit or miss, as we've seen throughout the playoffs. Far from a guy that you're relying upon to give you big numbers, because it's just not what he does. At center, Valanciunas is up to $7,000 because he is continually crushing it. Another 49 points in game one with that 20-20 game. But the concern I have still remains. Does Kevin Love cause problems for him? Or conversely, could they play more Tristan Thompson, causing Valanciunas to be kept off the boards? So there's probably three scenarios here in terms of Valanciunas' value, and two of them are negative. Kevin Love plays well, he can struggle. Tristan Thompson gets more minutes, Valanciunas could struggle. But the ideal sweet spot you want there is Kevin Love struggles, but still plays minutes. And that would enable JV to put up the bigger numbers. But it is a low probability. Now, if it happens, then he goes through at $7,000 price point fairly comfortably. But if one of those two other things happen, I'm not so certain, as much as I do like him. Pirtle's at 35. Nah. Well, Tristan Thompson's at 4,500. And he had 28 in game one. I think he's still more of a tournament guy. I loved him way more at 2,000. And that's what I said in that day. For yesterday's action, that you really wanted him for cash, but at 4,500, the appeal, it does fade away pretty quickly, especially considering they aren't going to be starting it. If they were starting him in game two, I'd be saying, at 4,500 for Tomo is perfectly fine, and I'd be all about that. But coming off the bench, there's still a concern, especially if Kevin Love does click, then maybe we see fewer minutes from Tomo, and he doesn't get into that double-double range, which is what's giving him his DFS value. If you flip it over to DraftKings, Love is down to 6,000, so that still becomes that nice tournament option, while Valanciunas at 6,900.
Giggity!
Exactly the same as I spoke about on FanDuel. LeBron at 12-1, that's almost impossible to fade, I think. Well, DeRozan at 84 feels a little bit more impressive, and 78 for Lowry, I still do like that too. Georgie Hill, another tournament option at 41, and most of the other things that I said remain the same. Jeffrey Green's a GPP guy. I don't like Thompson at 5,200, that feels a little bit too high for Tristan. While the plumber, J.R. Smith at 4,500 again, just another tournament sort of a player. On to the Yahoo side of things. Korver at 11 bucks. Now, I really like Korver there for cash and for tournaments. I like the plumber at 10 bucks. I could even consider that for cash for J.R. Smith. Georgie Hill at 10 bucks is worth a look. Valanciunas at 21. Now, I'm okay with Valanciunas at 21. No matter what happens in those other scenarios, I think that's worthwhile. Thompson at 11 bucks is still a really good player as well on Yahoo. Hasn't seen that price bump that he's seen on the other two sites. While LeBron, Lowry, and DeRozan are your more expensive options that can still become cash guys on Yahoo. While Love at 2,300, yeah, I cannot go for him as a tournament guy. It's just too expensive given what he has been doing. Let's move on to the second game in the Eastern Conference. It's game two between the Philadelphia 76ers and the Boston Celtics. The Celtics conjuring up another victory, a comfortable victory, 16 points in game one. For the Sixers, the rotation was pretty much as expected. We saw, you know, big minutes from Redick, Šarić, Simmons, Embiid, and all those guys produced, but Bob Cove was shithouse, missed all six of his shots, only 3 points in 27 minutes. I don't expect that he plays only 27 minutes, but his shot was off. And his defense was off. He was just completely out of it in game one. I think those minutes should bump back up. And then we had Ilyasova and Bellinelli basically playing the rest of that with a little bit of Amir Johnson, Justin Anderson, and TJ McConnell. So a fairly similar rotation from what we've seen from the Sixers the majority of these playoffs. As for the Celtics, no Jaylen Brown, and he is doubtful for game two as well. So Marcus Smart started, but we saw a massive bump in usage for Al Horford, for Jason Tatum, and of course for Terry Rozier, and all three of those guys scored over 20 points and were all sensational in game one. Marcus Morris struggled. He took his high volume of shots, 11 points on 12 shots, and that's always been my criticism of Morris, but he still does have an opportunity, especially with Jaylen out, as a guy who's going to have to take those shots, and occasionally he has those nights where those shots go in, and with Brown out, it likely means that we get Larkin back in the rotation, and he can be an interesting assists, steals sort of player that does bump up some of his value. Hakeem Olajuwon also did a little bit of stuff on Simo. He played 22 minutes, but he's really not an offensive threat in anyone's definition of the term offensive threat. On FanDuel, we're looking at this one. The Sixers are favored by 4. The total is 206 points. And as I said, Jaylen Brown is listed as doubtful for this game. So it's unlikely he plays and Marcus Smart will start. For the point guards, Shane O'Larkin's down to 2,500. And because Jaylen's not likely to play, I like Larko at 2,500. He had 15 points in game one, and that's comfortable value at that price. And that does enable you to put in LeBron at 13,000 on FanDuel. And that's one of those ones that you have to look at. Terry Rozier is at 8,400. That's real high. Now, he's obviously been really impressive. But still, he's averaging 41 over the last five. Had a couple of good games to start against the Bucks, struggled in the middle, came up big in game seven, big in game one. So he's still a little bit up and down. And I'm not 100% convinced that I need to have him as a 100% cash guy. The shot can evade him at times, and he was excellent in game one. He hit 7 triples, almost 30 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. Yeah, big. I think those numbers are right. I probably should check that before I spout off. Yeah, 29, 8, and 6 with 2 steals. Yeah, huge numbers from Rozier, and he is a really solid and aggressive rebounder too. But the shot can evade him at times, and that's what gives me just an element of pause for spending up for him, say, over a Kyle Lowry, who I feel is maybe a little bit more DFS consistent, although wasn't the best game one for him, but still put up decent numbers. Timothy John McConnell's at 3,000 bucks. Gimme Larko at 2,500 every day. For the shooting guards, Marcus Smart at 6,200. 5,200, I loved Smart. 6,200, not sure. He can have those games where he gets the steals and weird rebound games or has these weird 3-point games as well. I don't feel super good about it. Well, JJ Redick at 54, that is a fantastic cash play in my mind. 27, 28 points, here it comes. Bang, that's what you need. And then you can build around that. So I do really like that. While Bellinelli at 4,200 is more going to be a tournament guy in case this array of just bullshit insane shots that he takes falls in. But then if they don't, then he doesn't provide that value. He's just not consistent enough, in my opinion. Love Jason Tatum here at 6,800. The usage is going to be there with Jaylen out. But still, despite how well he played in game one, he still only had 34 FanDuel points, which is fine at 6,800, but it's not blowing through that value. It's not making him go, shit, he smashed it. Yeah, 10x, 8x. No, he's like right on five to six, like right on that number where he needs to be. So I do like him, but it's not like he was sensationally good. Bob Cove at $6,000, obviously nowhere near that and hasn't really been near that for a while. It's going to be your tournament differentiator, if anything. He can obviously be better than this. We know that. Ojeleye and Justin Anderson, not really. At power forward, Marcus Morris is down to 4,500, and that gives him intrigue. Now, I'm very, very far from being a Marcus Morris fan or supporter or anything along those lines, but at 4,500, he's got that ability to give you 40. And that's a great tournament option, and I'd be in on using him there. While Benny Simmons is at 9,900 and only put up 37 points in game one, he's usually better than that. He's averaging close to 50 over his last five, including that 37 pointer. I think he is a decently solid cash guy. While Šarić at 6,300, I also feel pretty good about his floor of around about 30 points, which makes him a decently strong cash guy. Ersan Ilyasova at 5,000. The minutes were down a little bit for him in the last game, even with Bob Cove being limited. But he's not a bad guy at 5,000 to have a look at. I think you have to put him in your player pool, especially ahead of a guy, say, like Amir Johnson, who barely saw the court and had 0 points in his 5 minutes. For the centers, Aaron Baines at 3,700. They're going to play him decent minutes to match up against Joel Embiid. He's hitting threes now, apparently. Played 29 in game one, had 17 points in that game. I think for him, with that LeBron high price, as we talked about before, getting a solid cash guy in there, so putting a Baines and Larkin around a LeBron James, does give you a lot of ability to get LeBron into a cash lineup. So I like Bainesy for that. Just get me my 17 to 20 points, play those minutes, match up against Joel, and that should work, hopefully be able to work in your favor. As for Embiid at 9,400, if you don't want to go cheap at center, I love Embiid at 9,400. I love his ability to get 50 plus. He had 54 in game one. I think that's a great, great salary for Embiid. While Al Horford's at 77, and he was excellent. I think that might be a bit high for Horfo, though. 38 points in game one, which at 77 is bang right on the nose where it needs to be. I'm just not certain at that price that I feel super invested in getting Horford in there. I would rather go cheaper for Bainesy or more up for Embiid rather than spending that 77 on Al, despite how good he was and how good he actually is. On DraftKings, it's a similar sort of story. Bainesy for cash at 36, I like. Rozier at 77, much more comfortable spending the 77 on Rozier as opposed to the 84 on FanDuel. Yeah, Tatum, Redick, Horford at 73, also a more comfortable price for me on DraftKings, while Embiid at 93 looks really good too. Simo, Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, all those guys, tournament-y sort of players. Very similar to how it looks on FanDuel, but probably the bigger difference on DraftKings is that Bob Cove is down to 5,000. And him at $5,000, that should really be coming into your tournament player. He can clearly go out there. He's a guy that can have 6 threes and 6 steals in a game, and that's a 50-point sort of a player that can do that. And at $5,000, that is the key to you winning those large field tournaments. I wouldn't want to do it in cash. It's more appealing, but I wouldn't want to do it in cash. But that $5,000 price point is really, really interesting over on DraftKings. While Shane Larkin doesn't have the appeal on DraftKings as he does on FanDuel, because he is at 3,100 where he's at 25 on FanDuel. So that is, you know, quite a significant difference. If you look at it over on Yahoo, Baines is a minimum salary guy. Tatum, Rozier, Embiid, all of those guys have really good cash value. You'd Larkin at 10,000. If I'm taking one of those guys, it's Larkin or Baines. I take Baines. And the reason Larkin stands out on FanDuel is because he's $100 or $1,000 less than what the usual minimum is. Marcus Smart at 17 also is really appealing. He had 28 points in game one, and I could consider that for cash. It's still probably more tournaments, but he could easily have you 35 or 40. And that's great value at $17 on the Yahoo scoring system. That will wrap it up for us for today's show. Exciting lot of game twos tomorrow. Really critical. Clearly, Toronto needs that win. Philadelphia needs that win to even up those series. So we're going to be watching those and seeing how they go. Don't forget to go back and check out all the past podcasts. The 2017 draft recaps are up to pick 12 so far. So 1-4 in part 1, 5-8 in part 2, and 9-12 in part 3. Follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And if you are listening to this on Apple Podcasts, a 5-star rating and a review is always an excellent way of supporting the podcast. So go ahead and do that and check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network wherever you find podcasts. Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and this show is also on YouTube. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Maurice Spates.